Welcome back, I'm Erin. And before I get into the subject of this episode, there's a few quick things I want to mention. First, as part of the StoryCorps project, which is a digital archive housed at the Library of Congress, Julie Murray recently interviewed her and Maura's father, Fred, and of course, one of the subjects of that conversation was about Maura and the case. The link to that interview is in the show notes and on the Murray family website at mauramurraymissing.org. Second, Nancy Corey's annual Boots on the Ground organization is gathering up in New Hampshire this upcoming October 17 and 18 to set out on ground searches of the area. If you're interested in joining that effort, a link to the Facebook group where you can get in touch with Nancy directly is also in the show notes. And finally, my guest on this episode is Joe, who's a lawyer from Massachusetts and who some may know by his online moniker of Folk. In the episode, both Joe and I use evidence that exists to posit two distinct theories about why Maura left Amherst and headed north on February 9, 2004. One piece of information that you'll hear us talk about is that recently, Julie was able to confirm something that's been speculated about for a long time, and that's that the directions written on the index card found in the Saturn were in fact directions to Burlington. And we'll talk about what those directions were later in the episode. So first, Joe is going to present his theory, which posits that Maura's intended destination when she left was in fact Burlington, Vermont. And then I outline a different theory, which is that Maura set out for New Hampshire to take care of an administrative fee associated with a speeding ticket she'd received some months prior. But rather than me and Joe going back and forth, point for point, like in a standard debate, we thought it might be more interesting and productive for people in the community to critique us directly or suggest their own ideas about where Maura was heading when she left Massachusetts. So we're following up this episode with a live stream event about a week from now at a specific date and time to be determined. During that live event, we'll also talk about Joe's ongoing legal effort to get records from Maura's case file, how the state of New Hampshire has responded so far, and what the topic of a court hearing scheduled for October 28th will be. And as always, feel free to reach out to me with any questions, comments, or clarifications. Okay, so, I mean, I guess it's not a standard debate because, you know, we don't want to go, like, point for point and rebut the other person's argument or statement and try to prove that we're right, right? It's more like sort of outlining different hypotheses or theories. So, I don't know, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first? Or?
Yeah, sure, I can go first. Okay. So, my basic theory is that Maura was originally intending to go to Burlington, Vermont when she left UMass, and that on her way she changed her mind and decided to go to Route 112 in New Hampshire. So Maura was not familiar with the crash site and the area of 112 where the crash site was located. And according to Fred Murray, she was very familiar with Route 112 further down, which is known as the Kankamangus or the Kankamangus section of Route 112. The Kankamangus or Kankamangus section of Route 112 is more touristy, and it's an area where Maura went yearly with her family, according to Fred. So my theory is that just prior to midnight on February 8th, going to February 9th, that Maura was starting to think about certain locations that she wanted to go to. She just wanted to get away from UMass. According to the Patriot Ledger, on February 21st, Maura had looked up directions to the Berkshires and Burlington, Vermont, just after midnight. So at this point, I think that Maura is trying to narrow down where she wants to go. She just knows she wants to go away, and she's considering several potential destinations. And then during the day, Maura was still looking at various locations. She called Linda Salmone at 12:55 p.m., and Linda Salmone was the owner of a condo or townhouse in Bartlett, New Hampshire. Maura had stayed at the same condo complex as recently as July of 2003, so fairly recently. Then at 2.05 p.m., Maura called Gosto. So now she's looking more towards Burlington. Now, we don't have an exact time that this happened, but we do know from Scorinza that on the afternoon of February 9th, Maura looked up directions from Amherst to Burlington, Vermont. And this is from a statement that Scorinza made and disappeared, where he said that Maura had got back on her computer afternoon, spent a couple of hours online, and that he implies towards the end of this that Maura looked up driving directions from Amherst to Burlington. So it's my theory that at that point, Maura had decided to go to Burlington, and she looked up the MapQuest directions. Additional support for the fact that Maura had decided to go to Burlington is the fact that, according to the old family website, as well as the car inventory list, there were directions found from Amherst, or from Route 91 to Burlington, that were found in Maura's car. And they were the MapQuest directions, according to the family website. So they match up with the MapQuest directions.
I don't want to interrupt you, but...
No, please, yeah.
One of the things that I meant to mention is that... Julie gave us one piece of, like, confirmed information, and that was that I presume she got from the police, and that was that the directions that were found in the car were directions to Burlington. It was a note card that was found with four written directions, 91 North to 89 to US 2 to exit 14 toward Burlington.
Right, 14 West. And that those are the exact same... All of that information is on MapQuest. In that order, too.
Interesting. I mean, it makes sense, I guess.
It does. So that's how they would have known that it was the MapQuest direction. So we now know that there were driving directions... that the driving directions found in Maura's car were on a 3x5 index card and included four directions that matched up with the MapQuest directions. And the four directions were 91 to 89 North to US 2 to exit 14 West. So that's evidence that the index card found in the car was actually from the MapQuest directions that Maura had looked up just before she left. So one counterargument from this particular theory that I addressed 7 years ago, in the Mary Beth Conway series, Mary Beth Conway reported that there were two sets of directions found in Maura's car, one to Burlington, one to Stowe. And it was September 16th, 2013, I emailed Helena Murray and asked her about that particular part of Mary Beth Conway's article because it didn't make much sense to me that there would be two sets of directions found in the car. And Helena responded that to her knowledge, there were only the driving directions to Burlington. And she believed that Stowe had been mentioned because of the call to go Stowe and that it had simply been an error. So,
can I ask one question about that? Just for
yes.
Point of clarification. Do you know if the directions to Stowe are similar or the same to what they would be to Burlington? I know Stowe is sort of close, but not, I think it's maybe 50 miles or so. That's kind of a rough guess from Burlington. But would they sort of mirror the same directions, like those same highways?
Going from memory, it would be 91 to 89. Obviously, it would be a different exit. But yeah, so the first two steps would be the same. Yeah.
Okay, got it. Just curious.
Yeah, and it's possible that that might have been a consideration too, that maybe, you know, that she could have exited the highway either place, I guess, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this leads me to believe that Maura had intended to go to Burlington when she left school. The question that I had myself and that I would get from other people when I discussed this theory, because this has been my theory as long as I can remember, was that she wanted to go to Burlington when she left school. But it had been a mystery to me why, if she was going to Burlington, her car would have been found, like why she would have ended up where she ended up. And so looking at the car inventory, which was new to me, one of the items on the car inventory was Vermont Attractions Map. And it's I bought the 2000. It's hanging up behind me, but they can't see me because it's a podcast. Sorry. I bought the 2003 version of the Vermont Attractions Map. And the reason I bought the 2003 version was because it's been reported that Maura went to Burlington the last time during the Columbus Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I infer that Maura would have had the 2003 version. So looking at the 2003 version, two things are notable. First, that looking at the Vermont Attractions Map, you can see that Maura's presumed exit of exit 17 is shown on the map, and that Route 112 is shown on the map. So Maura could have looked at the map if she had stopped while she was driving, saw that she could get to Route 112 from exit 17 by looking at the map that we know she had in her car. So that piece of information about the map sort of cemented my theory. So now I think that Maura had intended to go to Burlington when she left school, that she had either missed her exit or she was having car trouble and rethought her route. Either way, she pulled over, she had the Vermont Attractions Map, and she would be able to see from there how she could get to Route 112. And so that would explain why her car was where it was. And as one final, as you say, data point of why I don't think that Maura would have planned to be on the route that she was when she left school, is that if you're to look up driving directions from UMass to Lincoln, and Lincoln just being, you know, the beginning of the Kankamongas, the routes that would be provided to you on MapQuest don't go by the crash site. That's why I don't think that Maura planned to be on the route that she was on when she left school. And those are the main points of my theory.
Okay. I have one other question.
Yes.
Did you notice at all when the police started looking at Vermont?
Yeah, well, I think that the police started looking at Vermont when the index card was discovered. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was around February 20th, 21st, maybe. That's what jumps into my mind.
Okay. And I know they did some searches in the Burlington area, right? Like they, yeah. Or at least not searches like with dogs or anything, but they canvassed the hotels in the area and sort of put out a be on the lookout there.
Right, that's right. And that was because I have like tried to figure out what caused that. And it was finding the index card. So the index card was in Not Without Peril, which, you know.
Oh, it was. Book.
Yeah, it was in Not Without Peril. And so,
do you know what the source is? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I mean, I no, that's totally fine. Sharon explicitly says on the family website that it was found in Not Without Peril and that she had seen it. But it's mentioned in a newspaper article, too. I could find that for you.
That'd be great, because that's one of my questions. Like, where was it located in the car? Like, if it was in the trunk, it would mean less than if it was, like, on the dashboard displayed somewhere. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, I've been trying to figure out, like, she seemed to tuck certain things into, like, books or program, like, the email that was found in her dorm was tucked into a sports program.
Right.
So, personally, I lose pieces of paper in my car sometimes. Like, they'll just fly around. Maybe she put the index card in Not Without Peril so it would be kind of weighted so that she wouldn't lose the index card. So I think that, you know, it would be good to know where the book was, though. I agree.
Yeah.
So it looks like it was first reported in the Caledonian on February 21st, 04. And I'm looking at an archive of the family website. And basically it has notes of Sharon. And it talks about the Caledonian article from February 21st, 2004. And it says, she, meaning Sharon, said Murray's father and her son went through Maura's stuff again and found an index card with MapQuest directions for Burlington, Vermont. And then there's a side note by Sharon that says, I have seen these directions. They were in a book that was in Maura's car. And I know from another source that was definitely Not Without Peril. So
okay.
Yeah. But anyway, that's why there was a delay to start really focusing on that area, because it wasn't until like they found the card and then they said, oh, and she had looked on her computer too, that they thought that there might be more significance to Burlington.
Makes sense. That's awesome information to have.
Yeah.
Probably explain my theory.
Yes.
All right. So the basic idea is that I think it's possible on Saturday, February 7th/8th, when she got into the accident in her father's Corolla, that she found out from the officer, the Hadley officer that showed up to the accident scene, that her license was suspended in the state of New Hampshire. And I talked to the Hadley lieutenant and explained the hypothesis, the theory, to him and asked him some questions about it. And he believed that that was possible, that they could actually see, for one, when they ran her license, if there were any outstanding issues like that. One thing to note is that it wouldn't prevent her from driving in Massachusetts. It wouldn't have meant that she broke any laws in Mass. It just meant that if she were to do something like renew her license or register a car, for example, like she was planning to do at the end of the week, it could hold that process up. And that's because Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and I would imagine most of New England probably, have reciprocity. So, meaning that if you have an outstanding issue in one state, it'll prevent you from doing certain actions in another state. So, if she found out that Saturday night / Sunday morning, it could explain why there was sort of a rush to head up north.
Yeah.
So, if her license was suspended, which we know, we actually know that it was for a period in 2003. From August 27th, 2003 to September 27th, 2003, it was definitely suspended. But it doesn't automatically reinstate when the suspension period's up. So in order for that to occur, you actually have to pay an additional fee, a reinstatement fee. And while there's records showing that she paid everything else and she did everything else that she was supposed to do, there's no record showing that she ever paid the reinstatement fee. And I've asked the police, I've made FOIA requests, they refuse to answer the question. So this is speculation, that component of it. I have reasons to believe that she didn't know or pay the reinstatement fee, but I don't know for sure.
Have you tried to look into other cases that would be from, it would be nice if there were analogs, if you knew that in other cases that were similar, whether it would be easy to determine that the, you know, the payment was made, that the reinstatement, that you would have evidence of it.
Right. So I don't, I only have a few anecdotal examples. I know Ethan's mother, for one, I believe that they lived in Maine, and she had her license suspended in a different state. The time had lapsed and she thought it was all set, and turns out it was not all set because she never paid the reinstatement fee. I also talked to one of the sheriffs in New Hampshire, and he said that it was a really common problem, especially for out-of-staters, and estimated that approximately 5% of the drivers on the road in New Hampshire did not have a valid license, technically, because they had not paid the reinstatement fee. So those aren't solid empirical numbers, but I guess I was left with a pretty strong impression that it's not an uncommon issue. So the idea is that she found out, she knew that it would need to be taken care of before the end of the week, probably, because that's when Fred was coming back to Amherst. He had to get his Corolla back, and they were going to buy and register the new car. So she could have sent a check, because they do accept checks or cash, but I think that, you know, the time that it takes to mail out the check, have them cash it, make sure that the funds were in our account and send it to the right office and all that stuff, probably they wouldn't be set by the end of the week. So like the most sure way to do it is probably cash. And I think that it was pretty nominal. I think it was only $25 or $50.
Oh, okay.
To take care of it. It wasn't a huge, huge amount. And that would have been in Concord, at the Concord office, that she would have had to take care of that. So not necessarily where she got the ticket, but at the DMV headquarters in Concord. So, yeah, so that's the basic idea, that she was heading up for a night and was going to pay the reinstatement fee, perhaps drop her car at her mother's house in Hanson on the way back, and get a ride back to UMass somehow, either with her nursing cohort, whose clinicals were Tuesday evenings in the Metro Boston area, or, you know, get a ride back from a family member or somebody else later in the week. That's the basic theory.
And what would be the point of leaving the Saturn at her mother's?
So my thought was, because Fred wanted a junket originally, and they sort of figured that they'd just leave it wherever they bought a car. But he also sort of put Maura in charge of that. From what I recall, he said something about Maura being in charge of figuring out what to do with the car. And I think that's why there was that call to, I think, a Belchertown auto salvage yard on the Saturday prior. But the reason I think that she might have dropped it in Mass was because after the accident, she was feeling bad about the fact that her dad was only going to have to pay $500 ultimately. But still, it's not a small amount, especially to a college student. So if you can get any money at all for the car, then I think it might have crossed her mind, like, well, maybe I'll try to sell it and we won't just totally junk it. Like, maybe I can get something for it. But I can't keep it here at UMass, because then I would have to pay for two parking spots. And so I need to do something with it before the end of the week. Otherwise, I either have to junk it or I have to pay an additional parking pass, which was like a few hundred dollars at the time. And that sort of defeats the purpose.
I just want to clarify one thing. Mm-hmm. Do you have two distinct theories? Like, her bringing the car to her mother's house, is that related to her paying the reinstatement fee?
I think I understand what you're saying. So if she didn't have to do something with the car by the end of the week or junk it, would she still have dropped it off? Or if she only had to pay the reinstatement fee and didn't have to worry about the car, would she still have gone? Right?
Right.
So, yes. Yeah. So I think that the primary motivation was probably to pay the reinstatement fee, assuming that her license was still suspended. But sort of like a secondary motivator might be, well, I have to do something with the car anyway. So while I'm doing this, I'll do this other errand. And then I am pretty sure I can get a ride back to UMass with my nursing student friend who has already driven me back and forth. So I don't think that dropping off the car was a primary motivation. I just think that it kind of would make sense to sort of do those things at the same time. She also said in the phone call to her friend, Erin Murphy O'Neill, who she gave the clothes back to, she returned clothing to before she left, she said that she was going home. She actually said that. And I believe she said that in an email too to her professor. She said she was going home for a family emergency. So those are two different people that she actually gave a location to, like, where she was going.
Yes.
Maybe she didn't give all of the details about why, but, like, but, you know, if you take it at face value, maybe she was going home. So that's why I sort of figured that second component.
Okay, so I have a bunch of questions about the theory. I guess the first one that comes to mind is, wouldn't she be nervous to drive around in New Hampshire before she had paid it? So, like, why not pay it first?
Well, right, so I thought about that too, and yes, it would have been a risk to drive in New Hampshire knowing that it was suspended for sure. But is it one that she had to take? Because the alternative would have to be that either she gets someone to drive her which would have been a tall order, you know, for someone in Amherst to drive all the way to New Hampshire with her in the middle of the week. Or she'd have to go home first to Massachusetts, go up to New Hampshire, and then have somebody give her a ride all the way back to Amherst. So either way, she would have to ask somebody else for help in both of those scenarios. The only way that she can do it by herself is to take the risk and drive in New Hampshire.
Okay, so I think you're saying that she may have driven further north because paying the reinstatement fee was only part of whatever she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So why not pay it, like, first?
Oh, I see. I think I see what you mean. So why didn't she just, like, on Monday head to Concord? Just go straight to Concord?
Exactly.
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. I don't know if that component really fits. All I can think is that by the time she, like, really decided to do this, it may have been too late. So I think that she left by, or the ATM timestamp is 3:15, right? So she probably left Amherst or the university around 2:45-ish, give or take, 15 minutes. Was that enough time to get all the way to Concord before they closed? Probably not.
Right.
So if she had planned it, you know, better and left earlier, I think that that would have made a lot more sense. But I don't know that, you know, if it's accurate that she only found out Sunday morning, then she may have just not have thought that far ahead. Like, didn't plan everything out perfectly because it was a last minute thing to begin with.
And I know that you touched upon this before, but why not tell Fred or, you know, any of her friends that we know of about the suspended license?
My best guess on that is that she may have planned to tell them, but just didn't get a chance to yet. Well, for one, I don't think it would have been the first thing she did, because she was already feeling sort of bad about the fact that she'd crashed a car. She feels like she failed. This is another failure, sort of. It's another issue, a big headache that she has to take care of. So I can see why she might have been... She wouldn't necessarily have wanted to say that because she felt shame or guilt or was just feeling bad about it. So, like, it's easier to handle if you, like, do it first and then mention it later.
Okay.
Because there was no way that Fred would say, yeah, go ahead, take the Saturn, drive up there. We'll figure it out. You know, I'll come back 2 weeks from now in addition to coming back next week because I have to get my car back. Like, it would have created problems for other people necessarily. I think there's no way that it doesn't. So if she tries to handle it herself, even though it's a risk, she doesn't have to involve other people and doesn't have to create more problems.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense too. But she would have had to have told them, though, when she dropped off the Saturn at her mother's house.
Right, but at that point, it's done. Right?
Okay.
And so I also think it's possible she did intend to tell Bill, at least, because she did call him on that day, but they couldn't connect. So if she had gotten in touch with him, I think she probably would have told him, at least. Bill would be, I think, a more sympathetic ear in that case.
Yes.